But it's time for us to leave the Vajrayana follower. It's time that we got back to the four great kings. Time that we got back to the four world protectors. As we saw, they live on Mount Meru. According to some accounts, they live on or near the summit of Mount Meru. But according to other accounts, they live on four subsidiary peaks, halfway up, or if you like, halfway down. And they stand fronting the four directions of space, north, south, east, west. And they protect the world against whatever dangers may be coming from those directions. And in particular, they protect the continent that lies in their particular direction. Each of the four kings is of a particular colour. Each is king of a particular horde of non-human beings. May have something to say about the significance of this later on. So let's take a look at these four great kings. Let's try to see them, to imagine them, as the ancient Indians, the ancient Buddhists saw them or imagined them. First of all, there's Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra's name means upholder of the land, upholder of the country. And he's white in colour, and he's a protector of the eastern quarter. He's also king of the Gandharvas, the heavenly musicians, and of the Pisachas, or vampires. Then there's Virudaka, whose name means simply growth. He's yellow in colour, he's the protector of the southern quarter, and he's king of the Pretas, or hungry ghosts, as well as of the Kumbandas. Then thirdly, there's Virupaksha. His name means he of the bulging eyes, or he of the wrathful eyes, and he's red in colour, he's the protector of the western quarter, and king of the Nagas, the serpents or dragons, as well as of the Putanas, or fever spirits. Finally, there's Vaishravana, whose name means greatly learned. He's green in colour, he's the protector of the northern quarter, and king of the Yakshas, or sublime spirits, and of the Rakshasas, the flesh-eating demons. Now all four kings are powerfully built, all of defiant mien. They all wear armour, and they're all often represented in Buddhist art. They're usually found inside the vestibule of the temple, either depicted in fresco on the wall, two on each side of the entrance to the main hall, or in the form of freestanding, often quite gigantic images. And it's these four kings, these four great kings, who now appear at the beginning of chapter 6 of the Sutra of Golden Light. They not only appear, but they promise to protect the sutra. Or rather, they promise to give encouragement to those monks who keep the Sutra of Golden Light and to protect the kings who patronize its promulgation. So who are these four great kings? What do they really represent? And why do they appear in the sutra in this way? And what does their promise mean? Before trying to answer these and similar questions, let us recall whereabouts in the sutra we are. Let's see how far we have come. You may remember from the first lecture that chapter 1 of the sutra is simply introductory. It tells us that we are on the Vulture's Peak, near Rajagriha, with the Buddha and a great multitude of deities of various kinds. Ananda asks a question, and the Buddha replies, praising the Sutra of Golden Light. In chapter 2, we meet the Bodhisattva Ruchiraketu. He lives in the city of Rajagriha, and he has a problem. He cannot understand why the Buddha should have such a short life. However, the house in which he is sitting expands. It becomes made of beryl, and adorned with precious stones. And four Buddhas appear and explain to him that the Buddha's length of life is, in fact, immeasurable. So Rusharakota's problem is solved. However, he has not yet fully assimilated the higher spiritual insight represented by the four Buddhas and their teaching. He has not been completely transformed. So at the beginning of chapter 3, he falls asleep. In other words, passes into a completely different state of consciousness. And while asleep, he has a dream. He sees a golden drum shining just like the sun. He sees also innumerable Buddhas, all sitting on thrones of beryl under magnificent jewel trees. And he sees a man in the form of a Brahmin beating the drum. And from the drum comes forth a series of verses of confession. There's a prayer for the progress of all sentient beings coming from the drum. There's the Bodhisattva vow. There are confessions of evil and also rejoicings in merit and verses praising the Buddha, all coming from the drum, coming from the golden drum in Rusharakata's dream. Chapter 5 is called Abundance of Lotuses, and in it the Buddha tells a certain goddess about a king who, in the remote past, praised the Buddhas of past, present and future and made the Bodhisattva vow. And this king is apparently Rusharakata in one of his previous existences. Chapter 5 is on emptiness. It's a brief account of the Shunyata teaching. It's not directly connected with the main theme of the sutra. Therefore, we're not concerned with it in these lectures. So this brings us to chapter 6, the chapter on the four great kings. So far in this series, we've been concerned almost exclusively with chapters 2 and 3. We've been concerned with Rusharakata. We've been concerned with his problem, concerned with his dream. And we've dealt with both of these in the second lecture, the Bodhisattva's dream. We've also been concerned with his confession of evil, better to say with his vomiting up of the evil that was in him, that prevented him from attaining supreme enlightenment. And with that we dealt last week, when we considered the spiritual significance of confession. In other words, we've so far been concerned with the development of the individual, with the transformation by the golden light of the individual life, the individual self. Tonight, the golden light begins to extend its influence. Tonight, we begin to make the transition from transformation of life to transformation of world. And as you might have guessed, this transition is associated with the appearance of the four great kings.